Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your outpost for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of your hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is always, the flanneled Drea Kaufman.
Hello!
Hey!
I wish it was actually cold enough to legitimately wear flannel here, but it is not. It's only because I have our air conditioner cranked.
Nice. So. Very nice. Well, I am making up for it here where I live because it is definitely flannel weather. So, yeah. But did you know that we had a brand new review over there on Apple Podcasts?
Ah, yay!
Woohoo! And so we just wanted to read that out. It said, "Thank y'all so much. 5 stars. By the way, thank you for using y'all. I appreciate that." And this is Kylan GR, and they said, "Hi guys, after months of listening to you, I'm finally getting around to writing this review, and I'm really hoping to make it in by the next episode. Ha ha ha. You did it! You did it. You two are the absolute best. You're the only people I know who get as philosophical about Harry Potter as I do. Miss y'all in between episodes. Can't wait to delve into the last two books with you guys." Well, thank you so much, and we do love to wax eloquently and philosophically. I don't know how eloquent I am, but Drea is on Harry Potter, that's for sure.
You flatter me. It's not always true.
we've both got our moments, I think. Right?
Yeah, yeah, we do. We have our areas of expertise, I guess.
But we really do appreciate the reviews. You know, it helped this show be a great show. I mean, the download numbers that we have are incredible for the show. And it's because of listeners like you giving us those star rating and reviews, helping people find the show. So continue to do that. Hit us up on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, and we will read your review out on the show. You can find us on Twitter @ Join Nerd Party. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty. You can write us an email. Drea and I do love getting the emails over on thenerdparty.com. Go to the contact section and choose Owlpost. And then that email comes to Drea and I, and we can talk to you. And sometimes, every once in a while, somebody
will... We can wax poetic with
you. Yeah, exactly. in written form. So where I can edit myself, you know, make myself sound so much smarter. But a lot of times, too, people have questions that we actually talk about on, you know, the show too. So you never know, you could be internet Owlpost famous. So Owlpost famous, it's a thing. But this is chapter 2 and we're in Spinner's End, and I feel like somebody could crucify me if I'm wrong, and they probably will on Twitter, hashtag Owlpost. I feel like this is the first book where we have not met Harry in the second chapter, at least.
Yeah, we're pretty far into the book to not have introduced the character whose name is on the title of the book. It is one of the few times that we don't see Harry right out of the gate. And I think this is the order the movie does it in, too, if I remember correctly. So it's only... At least if you've seen the movies, this shouldn't be too surprising.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we get a whole lot of very important information in a very short chapter here.
Yeah, we really do. This is not a very long chapter, but the gist of it is we start off with we're miles away from London, and we're in this neighborhood that's dominated by a factory. And, you know, just rows and rows of houses, and two figures pop out of thin air. And it turns out to be Narcissa Malfoy and Bellatrix Lestrange, who are on the way to Severus's house. So they have been arguing on the way to Severus's house on whether or not that they should trust Severus in the first place. And Narcissa trusts Severus because the Dark Lord does. And Bellatrix does not. So it's a very interesting beginning to the chapter this bickering that's going back and forth between them. And we kind of, like, this is the first time that, honestly, we've seen any professor outside of Hogwarts before school like this. Other than the first book, right?
Cause I was going to say, that's not true. Yeah, because we see Quirrell at the Hog's Head.
You're right.
Or the cauldron, the leaky cauldron. We see him there just before school starts in that book. But that's the first time. And even then, you know, we come to find out he's not actually the professor that you meet. So, well, it is, but it's not. But yeah, this is one of the few times we see a professor out of the normal Hogwarts setting and get a little taste for what that looks like. And you know, what's interesting is the way she introduces these characters in this book, in this chapter, in that it doesn't sort of automatically tell you that it's a Malfoy. It doesn't automatically tell you that it's Bellatrix Lestrange. Like, she intentionally sort of makes it so that you don't know who it is right away, and that it sort of comes to you as the chapter reveals, and it reveals sort of a big thing here about Severus.
Yeah, this is really, really interesting, because we get to Severus's house, and he invites them in. And they're like, are we here alone? And we learn that this is where Wormtail has been. He's been staying with Severus. And he points the door at a... he points his wand at a hidden door behind some books, and it flies open. And he's standing right there listening. So that's awkward. And then he tells Wormtail to get him some drinks. And then they have an argument about whether or not Wormtail's a servant or not, which I thought was kind of funny.
Yeah, and I think it's funny. He's like, do you want to go back? He keeps kind of challenging him, like, oh, do you want to go back to the Dark Lord and tell him that this is not good enough? Oh, you want a more dangerous assignment? Okay, I'll give you a more dangerous assignment. He's like, I'll get the wine. Like, you know, he doesn't really admit defeat, but he admits defeat in that sense. And then we get Bellatrix sort of challenging and asking the same questions that I'm sure a lot of readers have as to what is going on, and why is it that the Dark Lord trusts Snape, right? And where has he been, and why has he done what he's done? We basically get another summary of what's happened in the last few books, and the same questions we've been asking ourselves, like, why hasn't Snape just taken care of Harry Potter?
See, what I found so interesting about this is that this is also, like, I was thinking back to the time of reading this book for the first time, and since we're kind of avoiding spoilers as we go through the series, we're reading it along as if we only know what the books are giving us. Like, I remember this chapter just being, it felt revolutionary reading it, because Snape has a perfect answer for every single thing that he's done, and why the Dark Lord is pleased with him and still keeps him so close in his council. In fact, we get the feeling from this chapter that there's almost nobody closer to the Dark Lord than Severus Snape. Maybe Bellatrix, but we almost feel as though from the end of this chapter, like, he's like number two in command.
It also gives you the impression that the Dark Lord is being much more strategic and thoughtful and kind of playing a long game that we never really anticipated or expected or were aware of previously. So that's also really interesting, because, you know, you sort of get this power hungry, mud grubbing, like, sways all the people to his side impression from, you know, Voldemort up till now. And now you're like, oh, there's a long game being played here. There's so much more going on. He's got spies, he's got plants, which they kind of allude to, but it just feels different when you actually know that.
Yeah. I mean, I think what it is we can see, you know, obviously Voldemort ran in where, you know, I don't know if he's an angel, so devils fear to tread, you know, basically in the first book. And, you know, he dies at the hands of Harry's mother sacrificing herself, and that sacrifice rebounding from Harry, you know. So I think in many ways he's almost learned his lesson, you know, not to just go off willy-nilly, and to be more strategic, like you said, in his planning. And we've seen, those type of plans, especially when you think about the plan of how he even came back in the first place with when we read the Goblet of Fire. And so, and I love there, before he dives into answering every single question that Bellatrix has, they have this back and forth about like who was better serving him in the time period where the Dark Lord was gone. And I love that Severus's answer is, oh yes, it's so great that you were languishing in Azkaban and had absolutely nothing to give him when he returned. But I, on the other hand, had been Dumbledore's friend for 16 years and had a wealth of information to give him. So yes, I guess good for you. And it's just like, I feel like this is the most time we've ever really spent with Snape outside of him, trashing Harry Potter. And what we see here is that he has the same exact feelings toward other people as well.
Yeah, you just get this idea. He's just kind of an unhappy, unpleasant man in general, towards Harry or towards other people. He doesn't care. He's an equal opportunity grouch, I guess. But yeah, it's interesting how that all works and how he's responsive to that. It also is a really interesting argument when you talk about sort of that self-sacrifice and standing up for the cause and the difference of opinion of what that looks like and what's actually beneficial, right? Is getting yourself killed or jailed over a cause really doing any good? And, maybe the answer in some situations is yes, but in this particular one, not that we want to support an evil cause or anything like that, but in this point, the point he's making is not sacrificing yourself for this platform when there was no point. That didn't do anybody any good. Like, there's no good that came of that. All you did was suffer and not get to live life and not get to come to the table with anything productive. And not that I think everyone should not sacrifice themselves for their evil doings, but if you take it on a different perspective and think about the positive movements in the world and how you can make a valuable contribution, alienating people and, that sort of thing is not always going to be the most effective way to get your message across.
What's so perfect about all the answers that he does give is that he does not lie about the fact that some of the things he did are strictly out of self-interest and self-preservation, which, of course, I think, because of that, the Dark Lord appreciates that. Because what is the Dark Lord's main MO? It's to survive. And so that's exactly what Snape has done. And so, as we learn about, the fact that he didn't think the reason he didn't return immediately is that he returned 2 hours later on Dumbledore's orders once Voldemort had returned. And in doing that, he was able to stay in Dumbledore's good graces. And once he told the Dark Lord that, the Dark Lord was very happy with not only him for doing that, continuing to be a spy, but also all of the information that he has been able to give him.
Yeah. And what's interesting here is we learn a lot of Harry's, this chapter kind of confirms a lot of the suspicions that Harry and the it's really Harry and Ron, because Hermione never really buys it. But that Ron and Harry express that a lot of these concerns are real now, right? In this chapter's eyes, like, Snape is on the wrong side and is not looking out for their best interests. And I actually really thought that Snape's description of Harry was very interesting. He's really just a mediocre wizard who doesn't really deserve Hogwarts, who just happens to find himself in a lucky situation with, more talented people than he is. That's a very interesting perspective on what's happening.
Yeah, I thought that was fascinating. And I also thought it was interesting too, because she challenges him with the amount of information and what that information has led to. And he's like, I was the one who provided information that led to the capture and murder of Emmeline Vance. So that's something we've already heard about in the first chapter. And now we hear that that's information that came from Snape. And he's the one who's been providing this type of information. We also see that he is using Dumbledore's greatest weakness, and this is what's so fascinating. He says Dumbledore's greatest weakness is he has to believe the best in people, and that Snape says, "I'm using that." And I just thought that was so fascinating to see that as possibly is this, you know, like you said, Harry and Ron are always up in arms about all these things that Snape does. Is it really crazy that we think that Snape is actually a bad guy?
This chapter kind of says no to that, right? It kind of tells readers not to trust him, not to believe him, not to believe he's on your side. And it's really so interesting that, you know, he is outed at the very beginning of this book as a bad guy. I think it sets the stage to tell you that this is not going to be a good book. Like, there are not going to be happy endings in this book. And I feel like that's just consistent with the pattern she creates where, you know, half of the chat, one book is more upbeat, the next book is more sorrowful and downtrodden. And I feel like this is really continuing those arcs, and it's just setting you up to don't have high expectations for good things happening in this book, because you're just not going to have them, right? Right out of the gate, she's telling you everything you knew or you thought you knew is not the same. So it's so interesting. And, you know, we have some really interesting magical moments in this short chapter too that have such an important meaning. We hear about the secret keeper again, right? And that, remember the last time we heard about that was Sirius Black and Wormtail and the secret keeper where James and Lily were hidden, and that it was actually Wormtail that spilled that, right? Because Sirius wasn't the secret keeper. And so now we're found that, you know, the Order of the Phoenix is protected as well with a secret keeper, and it's not Snape who is the secret keeper. So it's just so interesting that she keeps kind of weaving these magical elements through. And then we have sort of the big magical element of the chapter.
Yeah, that magical element is followed by some information that Snape gives about Dumbledore, saying that the duel with the Dark Lord shook him and he sustained a serious injury, which is something we did not see happen. So we've got to be wondering, at this point, is Snape telling the truth? Is he lying? What the heck is going on? And at this moment, Narcissa says, because of all this information, she buys everything that Snape is selling and says, "I need your help. My son has been given a mission by the Dark Lord. He's angry with, Lucius for failing, and I need your help. And I don't really know if I should be talking about it with you, but, and he says, well, you shouldn't be talking about it, but you're lucky that I know what you're talking about because I know the plan."
Which just reaffirms his kind of place as second hand to Voldemort, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
This is another one of those moments where you're like, oh, so actually he's much more in this inner circle than maybe you could have even imagined.
Yeah, absolutely. And so Narcissa asks him to help her son, Draco, who's been given this mission by the Dark Lord, to help fulfill it. And then she asks him to make an unbreakable vow. And so he says that he will do it. So they join arms, and they have Bellatrix as their bonder, and he promises that he will try to look after Draco and see that no harm comes to him, that he will use all of his ability to protect him, that he can fulfill the Dark Lord's wishes, and that if he fails, that he will complete the mission that Draco has been given, and he says he will. And we top it all off with some fiery rope snakes around their arms.
Some fiery rope snakes, which sounds like my worst nightmare.
Yes. I think what's so interesting about this chapter is to see the ways in which there's a lot of intrigue already happening. You know, there's political intrigue in the first chapter. This is like not really political intrigue, but it's, you know, the plotting of Voldemort and his followers. But I also think what's interesting here, and something that caught my attention this reading, is we can already see Narcissa is more worried about her son than she is about Voldemort, which I think is fascinating.
Yeah, interestingly, you get this depiction of this woman who doesn't really care about the Dark Lord's agenda, mm-hmm. right? Like, yep. she much more cares about her family's well-being and being a fierce, fierce advocate for them than she cares about the Dark Lord. Like, she doesn't have these questions about Snape. She defies her sister. She defies the Dark Lord's orders, essentially. And because she gets the most angry when Bellatrix throws her husband under the bus, right? She's like, do not blame him for this. You know, she defends, you know, she wants to protect her son. You don't get this depiction of this woman who's, you know, a diehard supporter of Voldemort. You get this depiction of a scared mom who's stuck in a situation where she doesn't know what to do.
And I think that's the thing that I really appreciate, because I think this does set into context the followers of Voldemort a little bit. There are the fanatical ones. There are the ones we're not quite sure. I mean, because even with all that Snape's told us, I still, like, is he just selling them a story? Like, I don't know, you know? And then we also see that there's another side where there's people that are probably truly only following him out of fear at this point. We even see that with Wormtail, too. That's what that whole little banter back and forth with him and Snape is all about. So things are not all copacetic in the Voldemort front, you know, when it comes to his followers. And so I think that's going to be something that'll be really interesting to maybe see as we move forward throughout the book, how that plays into this part of the story and, you know, throughout the last book as well.
For sure. I agree. It is such an interesting insights in such a short period of time and in such a simple, straightforward way, mm-hmm. but it tells you so much more and gives you such insight.
Yeah.
Again, just super in-depth. Also role, like world creating, right? Just expand. She's so expanded in the first two chapters yes. of this book, just the world that the wizarding world interacts with. And so I think that alone kind of tells you you're in for a wild ride, right?
100%. So. Yeah, which, gosh, I can't, like, the where we're setting things up here, like, just makes me so excited, you know? Like,
excited and a little sad yeah. for it all to be over.
Yeah, it's going to be good, though. So, if anybody, you know, Drea wants to catch up with you as we really start to dive into this sixth book, where can people find you?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Vero under the name MattRushing02. I'm here on the network doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, talking about Star Wars each and every week. It's been pretty fun. We've had some behind-the-scenes people from the Clone Wars on recently, so check that out. You can find me on the Trek FM network doing two shows. One is called The Orb. Do that with Chris Jones. And we talk about Deep Space Nine when we get a chance. I also do the 602 Club, which is our general geek show, talking about all of the fandoms we love. Drea, I was just lamenting today that we're going to have to wait, I think, another year before the next Fantastic Beasts movie. So I'm like, I'm just ready. Just give it to me.
that's okay. We get to talk about Frozen between
that's
now.
True. That's true. That's true. I'm just gonna you know, let that go.
For those
go.
Of us.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like it's relevant. It's still magic.
Yeah, it's still there.
A little
yeah.
different. But yeah.
It is a little bit different. There's a talking snowman. And then last but not least, you can find me doing Cinema Stories with my good friend Courtney as we talk about films through the lens of faith. But thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.